Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Public schools employ more than 3 million teachers, the largest public occupation in the United States. With that in mind, our guest this hour wrote a piece, Improving the Teacher Workforce for Brookings Institution. School systems, she writes, must recruit, prepare, improve, and retain excellent teachers and distribute them equitably across schools and communities. And she writes about the challenges across these areas, problems finding teachers of math, science, special education, and English as a second language, problems for teachers in high-poverty schools and other schools serving high-needs students. We'll talk about the number of applications for elementary school teachers compared with those for secondary positions, and what it is the federal government can do to increase the effectiveness of the teacher workforce. So, a lot to talk about this hour of the program, and we will do so with Professor Pam Grossman. She joined the University of Pennsylvania as the dean of the Graduate School of Education in 2015, came to Penn from Stanford University School of Education, where she founded and led the Center to Support Excellence in Teaching and established the Hollyhock Fellowship for Early Career Teachers in Underserved Schools. She sits on a number of the nation's foremost organizations and boards for promoting educational research and teacher excellence. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Pam during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can find us on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Professor Grossman, thank you very much for being with us.
I'm delighted to be with you.
And if we need a little bit of reminding, and it's always good to be reminded of how important teachers are to our lives, you have some hard statistics about that, don't you?
Absolutely. Well, I think that the research has confirmed what many parents already knew, is that a teacher is actually the most important factor affecting student achievement outside of things like students' backgrounds and parental background and SES. So teachers are incredibly important. They have an influence not only on student achievement in the near term, but on student outcomes once they enter the workforce and beyond.
One of the things that you mentioned right off the bat in this article, that there are challenges that we face. One of these, a need, and tell me how great is this need, for teachers of math, science, and special education and English as a second language. Is there a big shortage?
This has been an area of huge shortage. It's not new, actually. It's been going back for a while, particularly in the STEM fields where people who are graduating with degrees in, you can imagine, math, science, computer science, by and large are not choosing to go into teaching. They have other more lucrative careers they're going into. So finding teachers who can teach secondary STEM subjects has been a huge effort nationwide. Similarly, we're not producing enough teachers in the areas of special education or teaching English to English learners in our classrooms. So these are areas that have already been shortage areas and will continue to be shortage areas in the years ahead.
Mm-hmm. And we're hearing, tell me what you know about this, that the number of students who are going into teaching as a profession in areas, even in addition to those that you just outlined, the numbers are going down significantly, would you say?
This has been actually one of my biggest concerns as somebody who cares enormously about teacher quality, is the number of people entering colleges and universities to study education. I heard from the Secretary of Education here in Pennsylvania that the number of people enrolled in education programs here in Pennsylvania has dropped by 52%.
My goodness.
Across the 52%. It's remarkable. And across the country, enrollment in teacher education programs has dropped, including in alternative routes like Teach for America, which has seen applications drop about 35%. So we're seeing a decline in people entering all different routes into teaching, which does not bode well for our future.
And what's the reason for that? Is it because the economy is doing a little better and there are more high-paying jobs around, or morale is low among teachers? What is it?
I think it's both of those. I think one, enrollment in teacher education always goes up when the economy is weak. So conversely, when the economy is strong and people have other opportunities, they don't necessarily come into teaching because, because the salaries don't compare with other, professions that require a college degree. But I think the other piece of it has been, even though we know how important teachers are, and that has been this, you know, predominant story, at least in educational research, there's also been a lot of critique of teachers. And in the discussions around teacher evaluation, I think a lot of teachers began to feel demoralized by all the talk about getting rid of bad teachers. So I think it's also been a time where teaching hasn't been made to see necessarily like a creative and rewarding profession, even though I think it's actually one of the, you know, the most important things any young person could choose to enter.
Are there ways, and I know you addressed this in the piece that you wrote, to reduce the costs of entering the fields, and are there programs underway to do just that?
So one of the things that we think a lot about is reducing barriers to entry into teacher education programs. And most high-performing countries, places like Finland, which you've heard a lot about, essentially support people who want to go into education by covering their college costs. So one of the things that there's been a lot of discussion of, and many states and the federal government have experimented with things like forgivable loans, where if you choose to teach in a high poverty school, which as you saw in the piece as well, they have a harder time attracting teachers, costs of your tuition and your loan are forgiven over a period of time. I think we're going to have to think about how to create incentives for people to go into teaching to make the cost of the degree, whether it's an undergraduate degree or a graduate degree, more affordable.
Mm-hmm. You also talk about things like having a bully pulpit from the president or other high-level people in the cabinet or wherever they may happen to be to really talk about the importance of teaching, to maybe even do an advertising campaign on buses or radio ads trying to attract people to the teaching profession.
Again, I think part of what we need to hear more about is both the value of teachers to our country, the importance of teaching as a profession, and some of the rewards of teaching. I think we've heard so much negative press about the conditions for teaching, and those conditions are real. So part of what we need to do is to improve working conditions for teachers. But the other part of this is making sure that people see the impact that teachers can have on students over a lifetime and how valuable that can be. And I think I feel that very strongly. I was somebody who went to Yale as an undergraduate wanting to be an English teacher. And there wasn't necessarily much support for that idea. I hear things like, you know, why would you waste a Yale education on becoming a teacher? And yet I think there's no better use for an education than to spread it among so many young people over the time that you teach. So, you know, my sense is changing the message, highlighting the rewards of teaching, at the same time working on the real working conditions for teachers, can help turn that around.
Are you in favor of retention bonuses or, as you talk about, salary increases for highly effective teachers in high-need schools? And if you are, how would you determine who's highly effective?
Well, this is at the heart of the debate over the last few years. First of all, I think teaching has always been a very egalitarian profession, and any kinds of proposals to differentiate teachers have often met with some resistance. At the same time, we know it is much harder to retain teachers in more challenging schools, and those schools desperately need them. So thinking about the role of a variety of incentives to help keep people in those schools is important. The Hollyhock Fellowship, which you mentioned in the introduction, was one idea of an incentive for early career teachers who are often the ones who are, you know, making the decision about whether to stay or leave, providing them with a fellowship that gives them 2 summers at Stanford, really high-quality professional development, and year-long coaching in between those summers was, you know, my idea of an incentive that might keep people in, would keep certainly keep them in for 2 years longer, right, while they're in the fellowship program, and then create a larger cohort of teachers who teach in similar situations, a broader sense of community, some of the intangible things that keep people in the classroom and in the profession. So that's one example of an incentive that's not necessarily monetary, but is definitely designed as a way to retain your talented teachers.
Mm-hmm. Professor Grissom, what are the numbers on people who leave the profession after so many years? They're rather high, I think.
They're high, although, again, comparatively in other professions, they may be similar. We're still looking into that. But education, roughly 50% of people have left the classroom after 5 years. It's actually lower in higher achieving, lower poverty school districts and higher in high poverty districts. So there's variation on that. But there is, you know, there is not a big effort right now to keep people in the classroom.
The other area you look at is how we prepare teachers before they even go into the classroom. And teachers, some get an online exam you write about. Some have very extensive teacher preparation programs. But we don't really have systematic research in this area of what is good preparation for a teacher.
Well, I've certainly been working on this question for most of my career. So, I one of the recommendations we make in this Brookings report is to invest more in research on teacher education, because I think knowing how we can better prepare teachers for the demands of the classroom will help retain them. I think sometimes people leave because they don't feel well enough prepared and get discouraged by that. One of the things that we do know is that student teaching and high-quality field experiences do make a difference in teachers' experiences in the classroom and their retention and also their impact on student achievement. So there has been some systematic research on that. And we're looking at other aspects of teacher education that may matter as well. So this is an area in which, you know, there's so many ways to become a teacher right now. There's so many different routes into teaching, including, as you mentioned, simply taking an online exam. But we need more systematic research that shows, you know, what happens to the people who are prepared in these different ways once they reach the classroom.
Mm-hmm. It's a big thing when you think about it, to enter a room with sometimes 30, sometimes even more young people, to be aware of their individual needs, what's going on in their homes, what they already know, what's the best way to teach each one of them individually, how to manage a classroom that who knows what's going to erupt. What a thing to do every single day. And you do it how many, 7 times a day, perhaps, with all new students. What an enormous job.
It's a remarkably complex job, and I think that's something, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it's something that people don't necessarily appreciate. People think, oh, you know, what's teaching? It's you know, being in a classroom with a group of kids. It's glorified babysitting. And it is so incredibly complex to be able to not only know the individual students in your classroom and what each of them needs, but also to orchestrate instruction that helps the group as a whole. So you have to have your eye on both the individual and the group. One of my studies about 10, 15 years ago now compared the preparation of clinical psychologists, teachers, and the clergy, because I was looking for professions that all demanded a particular relationship with the client. They were relational practices. The practice depended on whether or not you could build a strong relationship. And in talking with the people in clinical psychology, you know, they were telling me how complex it is to observe a novice doing family therapy, because there's so many interactions within a family. And then I said, think about it. You know, imagine the interactions in a classroom full of 30-plus kids and a teacher, and they just threw up their hands and they said, how can anybody watch all of that?
Yeah, it's quite a job. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Our guest is Professor Pam Grossman. She's Dean of the Graduate School of Education at the University of Pennsylvania. She previously was at Stanford School of Education, where she founded and led the Center to Support Excellence in Teaching and established the Hollyhock Fellowship for Early Career Teachers in Underserved Schools. We're talking about an article that caught our attention that was written for the Brookings Institution that looks at improving the teacher workforce. 3 million. I guess I never knew the exact number of people are teachers in our public schools in this country. That's a lot of people, but there are underrepresented teachers in some of the STEM fields and in some schools with high poverty, some rural schools. So how do we make sure that really great teachers, and how do we determine who those teachers are, and how do we prepare people to become really great teachers? How do we make sure they're distributed in wealthy districts and poor districts and city districts and rural areas? What is it that we can do to elevate the profession, to pay people well, and to make sure that there are people in the fields in which we need them? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go to phone calls. We start our calls with Jess in Milwaukee. Hello, Jess.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Part of the problem of trying to either retain or attract teaching is Scott Walker's Act 10, and I don't mean his implementation of his policy. It's just the whole politicization of demonizing the teachers. Mm-hmm. They make too much. They're not good enough. They're a drain on the system. And in the meantime, we beg and plead to try to find, and it's not just him. I lived in Florida. I worked for 20 years for the Miami-Dade County Public School System in the maintenance department, and we privatized under Jeb Bush. They privatized maintenance. They privatized teachers with the chapter schools, the charter schools and other things, and all it is taking public money and putting it into private hands. And basically, you're draining the system of the workforce, and you're making fun of this workforce at the same time you say you need them.
Professor Grossman.
Yes, I mean, I think that, first of all, the issues around certainly degrading the work of teachers or not elevating it, not recognizing the importance of the work is a big contribution to why it's difficult to get people now to come into the profession, and making sure that they feel that they'll be well supported if they choose to go into this. I think the story of privatization is also a complicated one, and how the money flows, and the extent to which, again, people see themselves as part of one enterprise that has to do with public education.
And we're in this time in our country where we're trying to figure out the future even of public education. So we have all these alternatives to public education being debated, and what kind of system do we want? It sort of siphons off some of the needed concentration on the way most of our students are educated, and that's public schools.
Right. The vast majority of American students are educated in public schools, and we sometimes public district schools, because charters, you know, many of them are also public schools as well. So I think, again, remembering that the vast majority of kids are educated in public schools, and how are we supporting those schools and the people who work in them?
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we've talked about this a little bit already in this hour, and it kind of comes to mind again with Jess's call. Is there a way to let people know, maybe it's like scientists who don't know how to tell people how important their work is or publicize what they're doing? Is there something we need to do so that people will know what the work of a teacher actually involves?
I think there are definitely ways of, again, doing a better job of showing, first of all, educating the public about the complexity of the work, and what it takes to do that work well, particularly as our classrooms become more and more diverse. I would argue that the demands on teachers have never been greater than they are right now. Elizabeth Green's book, Building a Better Teacher, actually does a very nice job of both illustrating the work of teaching and how teachers get prepared for that work. And I think more pieces like that help people understand the nature of the work are important. In addition to the messaging, though, we also have to improve the working conditions for teachers to make sure that they are paid well, that they have the resources they need to be successful, and the supports that they need.
Thanks, Jess, for your call. Madeline is next in De Pere. Hi, Madeline.
Hi. I have a relative who was a teacher for 4 years. She was a first grade teacher, at one school, and then for 2 years, and then a first grade teacher at another school for 2 years. And the problem is not always the teacher. The problem can be the administrator. And this is what happened to that woman, because she loved teaching. She loved it. And she was dedicated. But in both schools, there are children who are out of control. And so in both cases, she was trying to get the school to address those issues. But the principals didn't want that reported on the record. And so they would start, even though her children that she was teaching were at the top of the, really good grades, and even the naughty ones. But they didn't like that report that there were some kids that might be harmful. So they started writing negative reports about her. And in the second school, she was crying when she walked into the office midterm to resign, because she just couldn't take the pressure from those principals.
All right, Professor Grossman.
So you've hit upon a very important topic, which is the role of principals and other school leaders in supporting teachers. That's partly what I meant by support. Principals are probably the biggest reason why teachers stay or leave within particular schools. Good principals are particularly good at both attracting and retaining talented teachers, but principals are also the reason people leave, as your relative did. So I think the preparation of principals and helping them to understand how to support teachers, to know how to identify good teaching and to develop it among their teachers, is incredibly important. So just as teacher preparation is important, the preparation of leaders is equally important. But it shows also, I mean, this, your question also speaks to the complexity and importance of having fair and reliable ways of assessing teacher's quality. And this is, again, one of the things that teachers' associations and unions have worried about, is how do we make sure that these assessments are an accurate reflection of the teacher's quality and competence in the classroom, and that it's not used for other purposes.
Thanks, Madeline. Let's go to Deacon in Sheboygan. Hi, Deacon.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I agree with everything you guys talked about at the beginning of the show. The only thing that I find kind of odd is that you don't stress more the main reason why people are not going into education. Between my wife and my three daughters, three of them have been in public education for at least 40 to 50 years together. And each one of them went in for a love and a desire to do what was there. They really, really dreamed about it. They talked about it when they were younger. And each one of them, to a T, would walk away from it tomorrow if they had the opportunity.
Why?
Because they have turned out to be, collectively, the whipping post of any social problem that comes up.
Yeah.
Any small, petty local government, any issues that they have, it's the education system. They don't look to be well supported by anybody. They just want to be supported. That's all that they want. They want to do what they dreamed about doing, and that's been taken away from them to the point where if I were a young person, I think I'd be a fool to think about going into public education. And that's my comment. That's what's, I think, hurting
right.
the whole system.
Yeah.
Driving people away from it because it's a fool's errand.
Thank you, Deacon. It's great, though, that so many members of your family have devoted so much of their lives to teaching. It's sad what he says, but I think there's an element of truth in that, Professor Grossman.
No, and it's one of the things that I said is that, teachers have gotten a very hard time in the press. They often are seen, ironically, we see that education is the solution to every social problem, and we also see it as the cause of that problem itself. And the same is true for teachers. So I think it is a very difficult time for teachers, and I think that, again, as a society, we have to think about the role of teachers and how we support teachers and our expectations of teachers. If you again look at the most successful nations in terms of their educational outcomes, they're societies that really value teachers and teaching.
And let's go to Pete in Sun Prairie. Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Hi, Pete.
So I'm thinking there's a lot of problems attracting teachers in inner cities and in the rural district. And if a teacher wants to transfer somewhere to a different district, a lot of them don't want to hire them because they've got so many college credits and they're at the higher scale. If the teachers were state employees, you would be hired as a Wisconsin teacher. That would be good.
All right, we got the gist of it. Your phone is not very good, but
I'm having a hard time hearing.
State employees, just hire them as state employees.
And then they could work anywhere. First of all, the certification is at the state level. So when they're certified to teach anywhere in the state. But you're right that when they're hired locally. And this is part of our system of local control over education, that each district wants its own say over the teacher it hires. I think that's a really interesting topic, is to think about the teachers instead of state employees who could move easily across districts. Again, they can. It's just that many of their benefits are tied to that particular district.
Mm-hmm. What's also happened in Wisconsin, somebody did a long study of what's happened with teachers after Act 10, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did. A number of teachers are able to cross districts at better pay because there are some districts now that are wealthy districts and some districts that are poor. So you're jumping from district to district to get a better salary when, you know, you would hope that most districts would be pretty equitable and pay teachers about the same and have the same quality of education.
No, unfortunately, though, they don't, and that is a huge issue. So, for example, in the California class size reduction experiment that they did a number of years ago, one of the unanticipated consequences of this was when jobs opened up in both Palo Alto and Oakland, because of the need for more teachers to reduce class size, teachers from Oakland fled to Palo Alto, where salaries were substantially higher, and that left Oakland with having to hire, again, the least experienced teachers. So the urban districts are often paying less salaries than the surrounding areas. Mm-hmm. So that is a big problem. How do you raise salaries in the places where we most need high-quality teachers?
We should talk a little bit about, if there's not one federal program, there's another. Each new administration has a new federal program that's supposed to make education better. You highlight some of the federal actions that have been taken in your piece in Brookings. What are some of those that have been particularly effective? And I guess the first question should have been, are there any federal programs that can be effective on a local level?
Well, let's talk about just federal programs that have had impact. No Child Left Behind had a huge impact on local schools, in part because of the creation of incentives for developing teacher evaluation systems, for adopting Common Core. That was a policy that, and really continued across the George Bush and Obama eras, that had a huge impact on local districts. Via the state, but ultimately impacted the local districts. I think that policies regarding the teacher pipeline, the teacher supply, again, have often been through teacher education. So at one point when there was a teacher shortage, they created the Masters of Arts of Teaching programs that were supported in part, I think, by federal money, but those, again, drew a new population of people into teaching. There was also the Teacher Corps program. So one of the other things that would affect the local district is who comes into the profession created by some of these opportunities. So I think that there are certainly federal policies that have impact at the local level,
mm-hmm.
And certainly ones having to do with Title I and the education of kids who particularly who come from poverty.
Thanks very much, Pete, for your call. We go to Susan in West Dallas next. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I think that a lot of times blame is put on the teachers for poor results in the classroom. And really, in the past, there was a higher value that was placed on education. And lately, we find a trend toward anti-intellectualism and lessening of a value of education. So the children are not receiving that value for learning, sometimes from their parents or sometimes from society. And I think that this has a lot to do with the teachers having this feeling of defeatism, maybe.
Hmm. Is there an anti-intellectual era that we're living through, Professor?
Well, historians would tell you that there has always been an anti-intellectual streak in the history of America, so this isn't necessarily new. It's, again, one of the reasons why our society hasn't, as a society, valued teachers and teaching in the same way that places like Korea or Finland or Singapore do. And that's really been from the outset. We always saw teaching as a temporary career, not something that took a lot of skill, not something that we really valued and expressed value for. So I don't think that's necessarily new, but we may be living through another particular time where feeling of the lack of value around education is expressed. Ironically, that's coming at a time when higher education and success in school has never been more important for students' outcomes. So, you know, there are on one hand all these messages about the importance of students completing a high school education and then going on to college and the consequences that will have for their future life. But I think the caller correctly identifies the supports kids hear while they're in school, the messages they hear about the value of their education, the importance of their teachers may be much more mixed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Susan. Gary in Duluth.
Gary,
well, I don't know who you're talking to. Dennis in Appleton. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I think part of the problem with retaining teachers is that they're really expected to do too much. That'll be teachers, psychologists, family counselors, and that's a big burden to put on anybody. The other problem is that the teachers were not living in a real world as far as workplace. As I know teachers who have been retired for 20, 30 years that are still getting their insurance paid, and that just doesn't happen. They had to get back to the real world and live like most people live.
So in terms of that first point, what is required of teachers, I completely agree with you. We expect an enormous amount of teachers, and I can speak to Philadelphia schools where I live, where the number of counselors, nurses, librarians has been dramatically cut. More and more pressure has been put on teachers to fill those roles in a variety of ways. And I think we should think about teachers as one of a part of services that are provided to children and people who provide those services to children and how they can work together. But again, in many places, that sort of array of people has been cut and more responsibility falls on those teachers.
We're talking about the teaching profession this hour of the program. Our guest wrote a piece that appears in Brookings Institution titled Memo, Improving the Teacher Workforce, and we're covering a lot of ground here. Pam Grossman is our guest. She is at the University of Pennsylvania, where she's dean of the Graduate School of Education, and we're welcoming phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, always love to read your comments there. The Kathleen Dunn Show. Trevor in Viroqua is our next caller for you. Hi, Trevor.
Hey, thanks for having me. Just quick background about me. I was a teacher for a year, a middle school science teacher. Absolutely loved it. Very hard job. My average work week was 63 hours a week. The staff was great. Students were great. But man, was it, you know, a lot of work for not the best pay. And then people think teaching is easy. Well, if you think it's easy, I think, you know, they should go sub for a week because can it be a lot of work, especially props to kindergarten and first grade teachers. That is the most difficult age range I think there is to teach. And then the other thing with teaching is the degree. The degree is so limited. You can't go to other states without jumping through hoops, taking tests, possibly additional classes, paying fees to take those tests. Mm. And then my science degree, like, I could only teach 5th through 10th grade science, and I couldn't teach high school chemistry, biology, physics, anatomy, astronomy, without taking 6 additional credits in chemistry to get the degree, 6 additional credits in biology to get the degree, so it could become very expensive.
Right. Understandably. Why did you leave the profession, Trevor? I assume you did.
I got laid off because of budget cuts.
Oh.
Oh.
So, yeah, I was supposed to be teaching abroad right now in Qatar, but that got canceled on me. So
will you go back at some point if it works out?
Yeah, I injured my neck recently, and I might need surgery in a couple weeks. So
I'm not
getting any sleep because of my injury, so I can't even sub right now. But
right. Well, you'll get better. You'll get better eventually, and then you'll go back, perhaps.
And I hope you do, and I hope you find a job that where you are supported to do the best job you can possibly do.
Mm-hmm. What about the restrictions from state to state? Are those too onerous, and is it too onerous to require all these separate hours to teach sub-areas in your specialty?
I think at a time of teacher shortage, it's something that we need to look at, is the degree to which people can use certification in one state to teach in another state. And we can look more broadly at some of these restrictions that are put on. Part of the reason for some of these restrictions have to do with the Highly Qualified Teacher Act and making sure that people actually are prepared in the subject matter that they're supposed to teach. So there's some reason to think, you know, that the restrictions may make sense, but I think there may be too many restrictions, and particularly these grade-level restrictions where you can be prepared for 5th through 8th, but not above, at a time when we have shortages, particularly in the STEM fields, may need to be rethought. That would take, of course, because education is local in this country, that would take cooperation across states to recognize each other's licensure and certification.
More phone calls momentarily. We're talking about teaching this hour. Among our, as our guest reminds us, most valuable school resources for improving student learning. Teachers are incredibly important. And what must we do to recruit, to prepare, improve and retain excellent teachers and distribute them equitably across schools and communities? That's the subject of this hour. For you to join it, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. Let's go back to phone calls. Thank you, Trevor. I forgot to thank you for your call. And Jim in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi, Stephanie. I just want to say this whole teacher mess laid at the foot of Scott Kevin Walker. This Act 10 has nothing but demoralized our teachers. They have divided this state, and now he wants to go ahead and put some of the money he took from school districts back again. Too little, too late. This is his mess, and him and the Republicans have to account for it. It's ridiculous. I am just beside myself, and I hold a master's degree in education, and I'm not proud to be a Wisconsinite because of the divisiveness and there's just a fight over Act 10, and it's all his fault. There's 654 days until we cannot vote for him again.
Thank you, Jim, very much for your call. Well, the debate is certainly beyond Wisconsin, and we do have, I must ask for your thoughts about this, because there is, I don't know if Betsy DeVos is going to be able to be confirmed, but there are a couple of Republicans who are voting against her now, so it may be a 50-50 tie. But her thoughts on education and her background certainly is not in public education. It's in voucher schools and private schools and religious schools. So the debate on a national level is only going to intensify. Should she become the Secretary of Education, she'll need to really familiarize herself with public education. I'm wondering if you see this divisiveness, this anti-teacher sentiment continuing in this country or abating? Professor.
Well, I think that the debates over charter schools and vouchers and the role of public education are going to intensify, and particularly if she is confirmed, because this is part of, again, what she would be bringing into the secretary's office. And, you know, again, as a researcher, I always want to point to the evidence on this issue. There is actually a robust research evidence on charter schools, and on average, charter schools are the students in charter schools have about the same achievement as students in public non-charter schools, but there's huge variation in both of those, obviously. And in states where there has been a lot of regulation around charter schools, high standards, you have better achievement. And in states like Michigan, where there is very little accountability, very little regulation of charter schools, actually the charter school students perform worse on average than public school students. So, you know, I think we have to make sure that we pay attention to the research evidence. We've experimented with most of these things. We've also experimented with vouchers, and vouchers, by and large, have not proved to be effective in changing the outcomes for students. So, you know, I'm hoping that in this conversation, people go back to the evidence. I saw today that Eli Broad came out against the confirmation, and I think it's partly because, you know, he's somebody who has invested heavily in charter schools, but understands the kinds of policies you need for strong charter schools that produce student achievement and student outcomes.
I think the other thing that's happened, it certainly was played out here in Wisconsin because we did a lot of shows on this debate about Act 10 and the role of teachers. There was this sense among many who were opposed to teachers and to the benefits that they had that, you know, you're getting something that I don't have, that you don't work as hard. You've got summers off. You're getting great health insurance. You're getting some things that I, as a hardworking guy or gal in the state of Wisconsin, I don't get. So why should you get what I can't get? And that is a very, very strong thing that happens in these debates, doesn't it?
I think so. I think, one, again, as I said, people don't realize the complexity of teaching. They also don't realize the number of hours that teachers work. So you heard person, Trevor, who had taught for a year, and that number of hours that he was working was about 63-plus. I mean, teachers
right.
spend a lot of time outside of the time in their schools actually working. So as an English teacher, I worked every single night grading student papers. I worked on weekends grading student papers. I felt like I was never not working. And summers have shrunk. And much of the time in summers, teachers are actually working a second job or they're attending professional development. So I think, again, some of the perceptions of the work and of the job are not accurate in terms of how much time teachers actually spend.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, I think the comment about benefits is that there's been a little bit of a trade-off in the sense that teachers do get lower salaries, and some of the trade-off there is better benefits or pensions to, again, attract people into the profession. So in the long run, knowing that while you may not make much and you're not going to get huge raises across the course of your career,
right.
you'll have those benefits to support you later on. So, you know, if we take those away and we don't raise teacher salaries, again, you have to worry about what impact that will have on people coming into the profession.
A couple Facebook comments. Dennis on Facebook, after teaching in Wisconsin schools for over 30 years, today's political climate suggests my college degrees, experience, and efforts are worth very little. The job today has no union protection, no job security, limited benefits, and undeserved criticism. Sarah on Facebook writes, it's also expensive to get a certification to teach. It costs as much to get a teacher certification as it does to get a degree in business or engineering, but after graduation, teachers make far less than other areas. Paying back their college debt is a huge issue.
I agree with that, and again, it's one of the reasons that I think the federal and state governments should be investing in a variety of tuition assistance and loan forgiveness programs to make sure that people can graduate and go into teaching without enormous debt.
Let's go to Chuck in Rockland. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. How are you, Chuck?
Oh, pretty good.
Good.
Up front, I want to say I'm not a teacher, never have been a teacher, and I really pity the teachers. I would like to make a comment stating that I feel that the teachers are really being given a disservice. I think they're being browbeaten. I think they're basically used as a babysitting service. And I truly feel that education begins at the home. I think if the parents should get involved in the children's education and spend time with them, I know in today's climate it's hard, but it's something that's very important. And also relating to the fact that teachers, the benefits in that, God, they're the ones that are educating our future. Yeah. And without the teachers, where would our future be? I mean, I stick up for the teachers and every bit of opportunity or chance that they have or should be getting, I agree with. I live in a village, and the village, all 100 of us, support our education, support our high school, support our schools to the utmost. And I just don't understand what's going on with our education system.
Thank you, Chuck, very much for your call. Let's go to Sue in Milwaukee next. Hi, Sue.
Hey, hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Sue.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I've been a teacher for many years, and I have to agree with many of your callers. You know, you look at the pay, you look at the benefits, and teachers have this abundance of all good things coming their way. Not true. Summers, what summers? You're preparing for the next school year. Health insurance, you know, we get free benefits, whatever, or really good benefits. Well, you need them because your mental health, physical health, it takes a big hit. There's a toll. You need that insurance to get back on your feet again. I've taught all grades, as young as first graders. And first graders, you know, it's a different world. You know, we've got kids coming in, tearing up the classrooms, kicking teachers. I've had kicking, attempted strangling. It's not worth it. Would I recommend this profession to anybody? Absolutely not. It's not worth the risk of your life to fear for yourself to come into a job day after day, wondering if you're going to be able to walk out of there.
That's a pretty dismal view of teaching. Do you think most teachers, you work with them, Pam Grossman, are experiencing that level of anxiety?
I think there certainly are a number of teachers who are experiencing that level of anxiety and stress. And as I said, some of it has to do with the working conditions they're experiencing and whether or not they have supportive leadership in the schools, who's making sure that the schools are safe, that the teachers get the support they need. But it is, and again, as I said, I think with that support, it can be a very rewarding job, and I have prepared many teachers who are still in the classroom today and would tell you how much they love it, but they're also in places where they get that support. So I'm happy to hear, you know, the callers who are calling in and saying that teachers are incredibly important and they should be more valued, because I think it's up to all of us to begin to contribute to that message that, you know, we need to support teachers, we need to support our public education system because our future depends on it.
Thanks very much, Sue, for your call. And let's go to Anissa, is it, in Appleton?
Yep, it's Anissa.
Anissa, hi, Anissa.
Hi. Yeah, I'm just calling because I lived in Milwaukee for 8 years and met a lot of great young adults that were teachers in the public schools for downtown Milwaukee. They were teachers out in the suburbs of, you know, Brooksville, for example. And the biggest complaint I overheard from the teaching environment not only was the stigma of teaching at that time, but also parental involvement, whether it was lack of involvement at home, lack of involvement in prioritizing education for their children, and placing blame on teachers for why their children aren't doing well in the classroom. And on the opposite end of that, a lot of times in the suburbs, the parents can be overbearing with the teachers, telling them how to do their job and not trusting the education system to educate their children when they're away from the home.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call. And on that note, we'll have to end the conversation. but continue the subject, which we will in the future. Pam Grossman, thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, pleasure was ours. Pam Grossman, she is dean of the Graduate School of Education at University of Pennsylvania, was at Stanford before that. The piece that she wrote, we'll put on our Facebook page if you'd like to read it. It's from the Brookings Institution titled Memo Improving the Teacher Workforce. Our page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour and to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for all of your calls. News is coming up from National Public Radio. Stay with us in another of our presidential history shows. We look at George Washington.